I'm very well, thank you. How's you?
I'm good. I'm melting. It's very, very hot. I'm not complaining, but it's very, very hot. And I don't know whether it's hotter with the window open or the window closed. I can't make up my mind. Anyway, good stuff. Hello,
Morning.
Dennis. Good morning. How are you?
Speaking of hot, it was 113 degrees here yesterday in Tucson, which is pretty warm.
Well, I didn't realize it was a competition. Oh,
Expect that in a desert, I mean, at this time of
I
year,
suppose,
this
yeah.
June is about the warmest month, and
Is
then
it?
July. Usually we get monsoon rains. The rains start building up over the mountains,
Yeah.
but that's been a little variable the last few years, so.
I'm looking forward to the rain here because, I mean, we had non-stop rain for about 3 weeks, which was great. And now we've had non-stop heat, which means all the water butts are empty again now. So I want the rain to come back to fill the water butts.
Oh yeah, it'd be nice to find a balance to all this.
Yes.
My poor potatoes are dying outside, and my little tomato plants I have to keep moving them around. I haven't put them in the ground yet
Oh
because
no.
they'll just die in the heat at the moment. But there you are. Such is life. The challenges of life, Dennis.
What's that? I'm sorry, I missed you. Chow?
The challenges of life. Have
Yes.
you been to Fresno yet?
Actually, I fly over there on Monday,
All right, okay.
and then I'm there all next week. So come back on Friday.
Cool. That's your
I'm going to
first
be meeting with,
face-to-face with them, isn't it?
right, or mask to mask. They're a hospital, so I think they're still wearing masks in the hospital as a precaution to their patients. So, but that California actually just lifted a lot of their restrictions yesterday. So, who knows, by next week it could be a little looser with it. We'll
Yeah,
see.
yeah.
Yeah, meet with 127 people over 3 days. So it's
Oh,
going to be an
cool.
interesting. Not
Cool.
one-on-one, but in groups of people, so it's going to be interesting.
Well, I assumed it wasn't one on one. I mean, I know you have cape somewhere there, but you're not Superman.
It'll be fun. It's they're up for it, and it'll be a learning experience for both of us, for their organization and myself. So it's all good.
Good,
Is
good.
the new one that you're venturing to work with?
Yeah, actually, I've been talking to him for about 3 years. Some of these
Oh.
consulting arrangements don't happen overnight when it involves the
True.
whole organization there.
True.
And first year it was a budget issue. They said, well, we'll put it in the budget. And then and the next year was COVID. So they decided to delay with COVID, obviously. So here we are at year three. So it's good.
Morning, Michael.
Morning.
Morning, Michael. How are you?
Morning, Willie. You're fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm very good indeed.
I have a cup of Starbucks here. We're all good.
All right. I have a glass of Alpine Mountain water here beside me, fresh from the tap. Much nicer than the stuff you buy in a bottle. Oh.
Too early for a glass of Jameson's in Victoria, so.
Yeah, I'm not a proper Irish man in that regard. I prefer Scotch whiskey. I much prefer Scotch whiskey.
I was just being polite to you because everything I have comes from Scotland.
That's okay. That's okay. All our tartan rugs come from Scotland too. Who wants to kick off? There are loads of things I could talk about. I was reflecting on it earlier. I mean, we could talk about all kinds of things. But I won't. I won't offer my tuppence worth first.
You know, Willie, I woke up this morning thinking about the concept of timing. And, you know, sometimes some folks will say, you know, it's all in the timing when we initiate something. And I was thinking about that in relationship to flow. I know you've been talking about flow a fair amount the last few days. I think your Facebook was on flow this week. And
yeah.
And thinking the best timing is not intentional. In other words, the timing just happens right. And it's kind of like you can't force timing. Timing, you allow the timing to occur. And if you're in the flow, then the timing happens perfectly. And they, you know, that kind of a concept, I think, sometimes is difficult for people to get their minds and arms around, but it's
until it actually happens them.
Right. Exactly. Right.
It's like, you know, over the years, people have said to me, oh, the science is wonderful. Got it. A few weeks later, or a few months later, science was wonderful, but now I'm beginning to feel it. A few weeks later, now I'm experiencing it. What happens as a result? Now I fully know. I actually know. Not know right. It. No, I just know. I know.
I mean, the reason I bring that up, I was with a client yesterday, and the CEO and the senior leaders, I can tell, are wanting to make things happen. They know there are things that need to be improved, but sometimes the best way for that to occur is to allow that to happen with their own workforce rather than them getting all wrapped up in the control, the making, the doing mentality, you know. So
it's like I had a client many years ago who was the chief executive of the largest, I suppose, financial services company in Ireland, a company called Irish Life. It's actually owned by a Canadian. It's I'm not sure if it's owned by Canada Life or if Canada Life is the parent company. It doesn't matter. But he was the group chief executive at the time, and he would go to board meeting month after month, and for a start was trying to raise a particular issue in relation to some consolidation work that he wanted to do. And basically, after two or three attempts, they kind of said to him, Kevin, you know, don't bring that up again. And then he met me, and then he wrote a perfect moment. And the perfect moment he wrote was coming out of the boardroom, sitting down in his corner office, looking out over Dublin Port with the water broken into little triangles with the sunshine glimmering on it, with a cup of coffee in his hand, telling me by telephone what had just happened. So he went into this meeting. This is about a year later. He went into this meeting and he was all prepared to bring it up again. And I said to him, don't bring it up, write down your outcome. So he comes on the phone to me and he said, I went into that meeting today, and he said, there were obviously things going on in people's minds that I didn't fully get. I didn't understand, because obviously I'm not in other people's minds. And someone else, through kind of a side conversation, brought up something tangential to what I had wanted to do this organization to do. And someone else said, why don't we do this? He said, I never opened my mouth. He said, and I got exactly what I wanted without ever opening my mouth, because first of all, I let it happen. And secondly, the timing was right.
Mm-hmm. Willie, I have a perfect moment question.
Yep.
What is the frequency and duration of writing perfect moments and waiting for them to come to fruition? Because obviously in our daily lives, I could be sitting there like a mad thing writing perfect moments all day long and then have an odd stack of them. Do you look on them as something to be metered out, or is it for seminal events?
Okay. it goes right to the heart of the one thing I wanted to talk about in today's session from a leadership point of view.
Perfect timing. Yeah,
absolutely perfect timing. I would write a perfect moment when the feeling takes me. Now, in other words, I'm kind of constantly listening to, not my thinking mind, I'm constantly listening to the things I know I need to do. And when the feeling takes me, I will write a perfect moment. It could be about a big event. It could be about a seminal event. An odd time, it will be an operational event. Perfect perfect example of an operational perfect moment. I did a team event with the leadership in Europe of a pharmaceutical company, AbbVie, Old Abbott Laboratories, November the 7th, 2019. I remember it vividly for the simple reason that what happened was my perfect moment multiplied by about a factor of 10. I arrived in a place in the west of Ireland, Ashford Castle. Some of you may have heard of Ashford Castle. It's one of these leading hotels of the world. About two hours ahead of everyone else. And we were all getting together for dinner that night. So I spent my 2 hours going for a walk and then going into my room and writing down that I was driving away the following evening, the two evenings later after our offsite, and that I rolled down the window of the car because I needed to kind of shout yippee to somebody. What I wrote down was that things happened in those 2 days. I knew this team very well. I had worked with them and I still work with them, but I'd worked with them at the time for about 7 years. Things happened in those 2 days that had never happened before, and that I'd probably never experienced in any other team. And one of the things that I just wrote, because once you start writing this stuff, it kind of comes out, was there were tears. And I don't know where that came from, because I'd never had tears before. I have lots of tears in one-to-ones, but I never had tears before in a team situation. And on the second afternoon, we were having a conversation about what turns us on. It goes back to mission. You know, Dennis, you're constantly talking about mission. And, you know, I like organizations, not the organizations that have a mission, but have organizations that are on a mission, because it's a totally different thing. And I asked them what turned them on. And we had a kind of conversation about that. It's about 12 people sitting in an open circle. And then I asked one of them, just out of the blue, I said, what are you most proud of? And one of the girls in the room said, I am most proud of the fact that I'm still standing after my husband died of liver failure 2 years ago. And she started crying. And then somebody else in the room, I could see his lip trembling. And he just jumped in. He said, and I am so proud of my two children. And he started crying. And it was one of these moments when a group of people who worked together for years actually became almost one. And I just sat there. Obviously, I said absolutely nothing. I know some of you might find that hard to believe. I said absolutely nothing. And I just let them talk. And there were tears and there were hugs. And in the end of it, they all said that they all now understood something more about each other than they'd ever understood before. And the one key thing they'd all learned about each other was each person in the room had each other's back. You could trust them. You could say anything to them. And that team is scattered at this stage now for the simple reason that team is so good. 3 of the 12 people are in Chicago, in AbbVie in Chicago. One of them has a global role in Costa Rica. They're spread all over the place because they're so good. They've all gone up in the organization. That's an example of an operational perfect moment. And I would write operational perfect moments, Mike, when I know there's something I want special, I suppose, to happen. I think it's the only time I've ever written what I would describe as an operational perfect moment for an offsite. And to be quite honest, I don't know why the feeling took me. have no idea. No idea. On the other hand, that same team, although there were one or two different members in it a number of years earlier, had written A Perfect Moment as a team for a huge strategic objective. And this is what I actually wanted to talk about today. Sorry, this is my little tuppence worth for today. Did the site where they actually manufactured the stuff, this part of AbbVie was originally Allergan, the people who make Botox. They make lots of other stuff as well, but Botox is the one that people kind of go, aha, yeah, I know Botox. But actually about 2/3 of Botox production is for therapeutic reasons rather than cosmetic reasons. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. All the Botox in the world is made in a little village in the west of Ireland called Westport. And these guys wanted Westport not just to be a manufacturing facility, but they wanted it to be a center of excellence for a whole load of other things, including a number of global shared services like finance, like procurement, and like supply chain. So they wrote, they didn't write A Perfect, because it's very difficult to get a team to handwrite A Perfect Moment in flowing prose. They drew their perfect moment. They drew it on a flip chart over the course of about 2 hours. And everybody kind of contributed. They were all standing around laughing and joking. And eventually they came up with a single picture. And you couldn't describe any of the people in the room as an artist. There were stick men and, you know, things that somebody had to describe. That's a helicopter. But actually what the perfect moment was, if I can describe it very briefly, was the helicopter with the Irish Prime Minister landing to open up a new building that had cost $500 million, which was a new biotech facility. Now, they didn't go into it in all of that detail, but somebody explained that's what the big shiny building on the hill is, which is what they described it as. There was a food stall with curry being served and a couple of other Mexican food, because it was now it was a global site. In other words, it wasn't just fellas in the west of Ireland eating Irish stew. That's what encapsulated the whole thing. And there was a little arrow to the Prime Minister getting out of the helicopter, because it was an in-joke. It was, they said the guy who was actually coming to open it was a guy in Ireland called Michael Ring, who was the local, they're TDs in Ireland, they're senators or congressmen in the States, they're MPs in the United Kingdom. He was now the Prime Minister. And it was an in-joke, because the chances of this guy ever becoming prime minister were and still are zero. The place was opened officially 15 months ago, and Ireland was in the middle of a general election. And unfortunately, at the last minute, the prime minister couldn't attend to cut the ribbon. So he sent the local member of parliament. Even down to that level of detail. And there's another one. There's a place I'm going to tomorrow evening in Pranji, just about an hour from here, which is another pharmaceutical. It's actually not. It's a medical device organization. And a couple of years ago, they wrote A Perfect Moment about what they called the donkey's field. And the donkey's field was a big field with donkeys in it, where they were celebrating the opening of a brand new facility. About $250 million euros investment. And I wasn't aware of this story till I talked to the team a couple of months ago. And the team has changed an awful lot since I met them 3 years ago. And the chief executive said, I have to explain this to other people in the team here, because some of the people here did not draw the picture together. And the picture comprised obviously a big building and people walking down the road to this barbecue where they were barbecuing merguez. Now, merguez is a French beef sausage. Yuck. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. The chief executive told me on this call, a Zoom call with the team a couple of months ago, that he was traveling abroad and had left the organization at the official opening to a couple of people who had no idea that this picture had ever been drawn. And he left the plant to walk down the hill to the donkey's field to the official opening. And the first thing he smelt was merguez on the barbecue. Now they are big, as you describe them, as seminal perfect moments. My perfect moment that I mentioned a minute ago in relation to the 2-day offsite with those people in the west of Ireland was what I would call an operational perfect moment. Sometimes I am more inclined to write what I would call operational perfect moments for people who are close to me rather than me myself. And I know that surprises some people when I mention it, but most of the people with whom I've worked for a long period of time do it anyway without us ever actually discussing it, because obviously we've already talked about in these sessions the way in which we are all energetically linked, the way in which we are all linked psychologically, the way we are linked at the very building blocks of our energy. And so we can write perfect moments for our children. And generally speaking, when I do one of those, they happen within 24 to 72 hours. And they don't know I've written them. And they are in relation to very important things that they actually know they want. You see, some of the big stuff we write in relation to grand perfect moments in our lives, we're not sure what we want, and therefore we need to be less specific. But when it comes to operational perfect moments, you can write exactly what you're getting, or how it feels to have got it, or the experience of having achieved it, because you know what you're looking for as part of the bigger picture or pattern of your life.
How can you just drop that now, that you can write a perfect moment for someone else?
I don't know you long enough, Mike.
Goodness gracious, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I have at least four that I could reel off straight away, but we don't need to go into the details unless you want to go into some of the details. But of course you can, because we're actually linked energetically. I could write a perfect moment for you, Mike.
So, Willie, isn't that kind of what a CEO could do for a company? I mean, if you can write a perfect moment, that's what the leaders are doing constantly, for better or for worse. In their minds, they're creating imperfect moments, or they're obsessing over what can go wrong, and it does, or they have a choice to feel and envision a company successful, harmonious, and in a sense, maybe they haven't written it down. It's much more powerful to write a perfect moment down, which is kind of why you do a mission and a vision and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but there are actually neurological reasons why handwriting is very important.
Exactly.
I have not worked with a CEO in the last 25 years who hasn't written a perfect moment for his organization or his vision of his organization. Right. It's even better, though, when a team comes together. In my experience, because the teams I've worked with who have done that have blown away, have performed in ways that they never would have imagined possible, simply by virtue of the fact that they had effectively set their minds collectively. The sum of the parts of a team like that, a team that cries together, the sum of their parts is actually far greater than, you know what I mean. You know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm.
Right, that's very helpful.
So when the feeling takes you, Mike, the other interesting thing about it is sometimes some of my clients have had to remind me, you should write a perfect moment for your son instead of telling me he can't get a job. I forget sometimes.
But you see, physician, heal thyself.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. But you see, what we're playing with is our own energy, our own core energy, as an integral part of the energy of the universe. It's when Dennis, as you said a minute ago, chief executives spend half their lives or more worrying about what can go wrong. And that's part of, we have to have risk management in organizations. That needs to be done. But that worrying and that overthinking and that overanalysis blocks this core energy. We need to free up our core energy. We need to free up ourselves to become to flow in the greater core energy, the greater energy.
Could I add a different perspective?
Sorry, Shelley, I just wanted to say hello to Greg, because Greg wandered in here in the middle of a conversation about 20 minutes ago. Hello, Greg.
Hello, I'm good at meandering. I think I've picked up, so.
Sorry, Shelley, apologies.
So a different perspective was, again, on my travels of trying to answer who am I, what am I, and why am I here? I was guided to look into something called human design. And the human design, I don't know if anyone's aware of it, but you can find out an awful lot of information about who you are and methods that best work for you. And you can actually use it as a part of a business strategy as well. Now, it also kind of separates people in a way into a unique gift or skill. So, for example, I would say to you, Willie, that you're very easily a manifester. And a manifester has a special skill of being able to manifest things very easy and very simply. But in studying this, it then says, but manifesting for other people usually is at their permission. They have to request for you to be able to manifest. Now, this has worked for the last year really successfully with my friend and I. My friend, I discovered, is a manifester. So casually in conversations when we have lunch each week, I'll say, I've been looking for such and such, and I need these new chairs and something. And I said, and I've tried this place and I've tried that place. And the next week she's sending me a photograph on her phone. Are these the ones you're looking for? They're in this charity shop. And there they were. And she would do this time and time again. To now, when it's a normal thing, each week she said, right, I'm your happy shopper. What do you want me to find for you this week? And that's what she does. She comes up with it time and time and time again. So I think sometimes it's quite interesting. You can manifest for yourself anyway. For me, it works if I put emotion behind it so that I have to amplify how I would feel when I'm in that perfect moment. But I just thought I'd add that to it, because I find that fascinating as another aspect of finding out. So, for example, for me, I know that from a business point of view, that moving forward for what I'm hoping to develop, I will actually be working with all six groups. So I'd be working with individuals, entrepreneurs, companies, teams, networking agencies, etc., etc. Whereas for some people, they're specific, it might identify that their better skill is to work on one-on-one, or to work with teams, or just to focus on big organizations. You know, it kind of shows where your best natural skills and energies may lie in a win-win situation that works for you. Because when you raise someone else's energy, you get that back as well. It raises your energy at the same time. So if you raise the energy of, like, you know, 50 people in a day, your energy is amplified 50 times. So I just thought I'd add a different perspective on that.
Thanks, Shelley. I think you've brought up a really important point when you talk about putting emotion behind your perfect moment. And it goes back to the point that Dennis made a minute ago in relation to chief executives writing perfect moments for their business, or indeed for anything. But, you know, we were specifically talking about business leadership. We must remember what the very latest in neuroscience tells us about the effect of handwriting on the subcortical brain, the the doing brain, the being brain, the bit connected to the heart, if I can put it like that. In other words, the non-thinking brain. It's the easy way to put it. If I'm handwriting what I want as if I already have it, if I can just put it like that, and if I'm handwriting what I'm looking at in that perfect moment, as if I'm already looking at it, the visual cortex in the brain will be activated as if I'm looking at it for real. If I'm handwriting what I am listening to, for example, the audio cortices in the brain will be activated as if I'm actually listening to it. But the key one is, if I handwrite what I'm experiencing and the emotion that goes with it, if I handwrite what I'm feeling, the brain's hippocampus is activated as if I'm actually feeling it. And the hippocampus, the center of the subcortical brain, the emotional piece of the brain, is the bit of the brain that enables us take the psychological snapshot, because it is the part of the brain that took the psychological snapshots when we were 3 years old, when we were kind of maybe happy to take one psychological snapshot, or unfortunately more often than not, unhappy as a result of how we felt when we took the psychological snapshot. This is where the psychological snapshots are. And you know, unfortunately, because the subcortical brain is visual, in other words, it's like a library of, or a photograph album of psychological snapshots, one could be forgiven for thinking that it's the visualization bit that's important. It's not. It's the emotion that goes with the visualization bit that's important. The emotion is what captivates our attention and enables us to point our mind in the direction we want our energy to flow. And that's why drawing is so important as well, because people get all excited about drawing. Grown men and women get all excited about drawing. Anyway, there you are. Particularly scientists, by the way, seem to get very excited about drawing, you know, or electrical engineers. Anyway.
I've got a question I'd like to address to Greg. And Greg, I'm not going to put you on the spot or anything, but in what you do, you're coaching folks on wealth and prosperity and making changes in their life that are financial. What we've just been talking about, is that something that you interweave into your coaching in terms of helping that person make a change in their life to manifest the wealth or whatever? I'm just curious to see if this resonates with what you do for your business. Is that something that?
Yeah, so absolutely, it has permeated throughout my throughout my coaching practice. The technical aspects, nobody wants to do a budget. Nobody wants to do those. I mean, that's what they want, is an outcome. And to help them get an outcome, you have to engage the senses and the emotion. I also do a lot of training for coaches to help them learn how to be even better coaches. And I say, you can teach anybody the technical aspects of this. That is just the mechanics. But 90 to 95% of what you do is you have to help someone see and feel what that outcome will be like, what it is that they want to manifest, and how that they can show up in the world. And it's always about how does it make them feel, not about how does it make them think. So it's very much goes to that. And the other coaching that I do, the courage coaching and the fear coaching, it's how do you learn how to dance with the universe? How do you learn to play in the world and be the biggest part of yourself? And if you can show someone how to do that, then you get to the true why. You guys are talking about emotions. It's interesting. You would think, well, he's talking about money and finance and things of this nature. Nobody's ever going to cry. There's a lot of tears that occur because we tap into those emotions and all those myths that we all have, a lot of people have, I should say, about money. And, you know, money is hard and money is evil and money is difficult. It's not. And once you can break through that, then they can flourish. And it goes into multiple different areas of their lives. It's then it's like, oh, I can use this technique. I can use this tool. I can actually hear my heart and I can hear my soul rather than just up here. Because if we get it stuck up here, then that may be where it originates. We may have a thought, but as Willie says, bringing that thought into fruition and manifesting and bringing it into action, that's where I'll say magic happens. And it's, I often tell folks that, well, that's not, people will say to me that that's not scientific. I was like, maybe science just hasn't caught up with the magic. Maybe science hasn't caught up with the heart. Maybe science hasn't caught up with the soul. So it's very exciting, but yeah, it's definitely, this is incredibly relatable. I'm over here taking all sorts of notes, reminding myself of things that I knew that, that I forget. And it's like, Oh yeah. I need to write perfect moments. Cause for years I did affirmations, which is a little bit different than a perfect moment because I'm, you know, the affirmations as I did them, oh, I would write, I had 15 affirmations that I wrote on a daily basis. And I did this for like 10 years and nothing really happened until one day I was like, how can you bring emotion into this? And how can you really make these alive? And that's when things took off. And that's, I was an overnight success after 10 years, more like 15 years, but that's what really made things just flourish. Does that make sense?
Amen.
Yeah.
It makes absolute sense. It makes absolute sense to the accountant in the room.
Here's a technical question. Let's say that your perfect moment is about an emotion that you haven't experienced. So I've talked to Willie very briefly in emails about just a preconceived notion that the big financial breakthrough won't come. I've had lots of operational technical success, but the financial breakthrough. So I don't know what the feeling of the success side of a financial breakthrough feels like. I know what general success feels like, and I know what elation is and rolling down the window and going, yoo-hoo! But I can't ascribe or describe the emotions of a financial breakthrough. So how can I put something in a perfect moment that you don't know what it feels like? Huh, I've got it. Oh my God, he's stuck for words. I've never seen that.
You have? Oh, sorry, the reason I paused was perhaps Greg wants to take that question for a start.
Okay.
So sorry. I can tell you, if you don't know what it feels like, let's pretend that you do. It's our imagination. We may think, I often find that when someone says, I don't know what that feels like, I don't know how that works, I don't. And it's like, all right, if you remember when you were 3 years old or 5 years old or whatever, you would have this amazing imagination and someone could tell you that you're a penguin in the Sahara Desert. And you would, if you knew what those words meant, you were absolutely able to go into that experience and be that penguin in the Sahara Desert or the Sahara, depending on what your accent is. So it's the same thing. Sometimes you can... If you start thinking about, well, what would it feel like? I know that I don't know, but if I did know, what would that feel like? So it's you can truly tap into that. And that will get the glimmerings of that feeling and that emotion into your, I call it your soul, your psyche, whatever you want to, but into your individual mystery and as that connects to the universal mystery. So it's playing with your mind. It's pretending it's like, I may not know this, but I do know this because again, if we are all part of the energy and of that energetic, that word just left, that energetic biomass, then you have the experience in you. It's just learning to go flip. Oh, there it is. And you reach out and touch it and it will come to you very easily. Does that make sense? Does that feel right?
Yeah, understood. Yeah, absolutely.
Mike, have you ever had any other kind of breakthroughs?
Oh, yeah.
Lots. All right. You see, how you felt when you had those breakthroughs are what we call positive mental resources. And you can use that. It's the same as what Greg has said, you know, flipping through your library of things you already feel you've already felt as a result of some breakthrough. But as an accountant, first, banker, second, but psychologist primarily, I think you're coming at it the wrong way. I always recollect, and I didn't know any of this stuff at the time, and I don't know where it came from. It felt like the right thing. I got a job in 1990 to turn a failed bank around. And the reason I got it was I knew nothing about banking. My background was in the life insurance and tax industries. So I came in and it took about 6 months just smelling around the place. The bank had gone bankrupt in 1988. It was way ahead of its time, full 20 years before the financial crash. So I smelt around the place for about 6 months, talked to people, then wrote a strategy that had no figures in it, no finances in it at all, for a bank. Presented to the board and almost got fired because they said, first of all, you're an accountant. Was that a joke? And secondly, you do realize this is a bank and it's actually our stock in trade is money. Where are the financials in this? I said, you don't need to put financials in this. If you do this, and if you can picture what this place will be like, the money looks after itself. And, you know, 4 years after being bankrupt, 2 years after I arrived, it was one of the top 10 most profitable banks in Europe. I've done that for a number of banks because obviously when I started working for myself first, an awful lot of people who wanted to work with me were happened to be in the financial area because of my own original background. But I've done it with pharmaceutical companies. But most importantly, I think I've done this with what might be described as small business people or small business owners who wanted to be grander business owners. And everybody I say, forget about the money. The money is energy flowing to you. That's all money is. Forget about it completely. Do what feels right and the money flows. And the only way you can do what feels right is by having set your mind, by writing those perfect moments, by tapping into your emotions, so that your inner self, linked to universal energy, is going to guide you moment to moment to do the right things. And, you know, when you get into flow, lo and behold, money flows too. And it flows effortlessly. It's only a currency. It's only something that is flowing as a result of the energy you've put into the universe. People get hung up on the financial side of things. And the people who just let go, who forget about the money altogether, they're the people who are discovering that, first of all, they're having a great time. Secondly, it seems to be kind of effortless. And thirdly, the money's just actually flowing. You see, an awful lot of people ask me and continue to ask me, what about financial security? And the biggest joke of all was I was referred to a business owner by one of the coaches that I coach about 4 years ago. She asked me, would I deal with him because she didn't feel that she had the capability to take him where he wanted to go, which I disagreed with, but that was neither here nor there. And I said, I'd talk to him. And this guy had just sold a piece of his family business and he had 25 million euros in the bank in actual hard cash. Most people who are millionaires or billionaires, they're millionaires or billionaires on paper. And very often they owe nearly as much as they own. This guy had $25 million euros in cash. I asked him what he was looking for. And he said his big goal in life was to achieve financial security. And, you know, we're amongst friends here. So I'm not going to tell you what I told him, but I didn't take him up as a client. I mean, he was looking for financial security. And as I said to a group, Shelley, I think you were on a call a few weeks ago. There's no such thing as financial security. Because there's no such thing as a sure thing. You know, all the people who put their money into banks, blue chip securities in the early 2000s, banks don't fail. Look at what happened in 2008. There's no such thing as financial security, but I tell you this much, there's such a thing as financial freedom. between your two ears.
Yeah, perspective is everything. I have a coworker my age, and he says, "Oh, the most valuable thing for me is time, time, time." And I contradict him now, and I said, "No, the most valuable thing's not time; it's fulfillment. Because we can have all the time in the world and sit around bored as heck. It's fulfillment, and it's just like you just said, financial security. It's just the way you look at it, and what are the emotions you're ascribing to it? There's no emotion to financial security. It's a dollar sign in a bank account." It's what does that emotion evoke?
That's an interesting one, Mike, because a couple of years ago, I asked this guy, what would your perfect moment look and feel like? He said, I wouldn't have a mortgage. I said, I can imagine your subconscious, three-year-old, childlike brain leaping out of bed in the morning saying, yippee, I don't have a mortgage. I said, that ain't going to happen if you approach it from that direction. We're talking about turning ourselves on and exciting ourselves.
Yeah.
And actually living. Not tying ourselves in knots.
So,
sorry, Dennis. To
build on that, Michael, I think you had mentioned in the beginning of this whole conversation, I think you used the term waiting for perfect moments. And I think that in itself is perhaps a block to experiencing perfect moments. The perfect moment is right now with us all talking together. We didn't write this down, but in my mind, in my heart, right now, at this moment, this is a perfect moment. And it's almost as if a consciousness shift of feeling that every moment is a perfect moment. And when you feel that and you stay in that state, in a sense, then life just flows and things happen effortlessly without waiting. Because the longer you wait, I would propose if you're waiting for perfect moments, they'll probably never happen, because the feeling of waiting almost like pushes it out further. In my mind, it's like you're denying yourself the perfect moment because you're waiting for it. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say? So, and I know, Willie, you can build on.
I've a client in Prague. It's a standing joke at this stage, because she was actually on a Zoom call with the people with the program owners like yourself, Mike, last week. And I actually said to her, Adriana, I'm afraid to ask in front of everybody else, because she keeps saying, why is my perfect moment not happened yet? And I keep saying to her, Adriana, patience. You're actually getting in your own way, because by waiting for it to happen or wondering why it hasn't happened, what are you saying to yourself? This isn't going to happen. But as I keep saying to her, sure, right. Perfect moment wouldn't be a perfect moment if it didn't happen in the perfect moment. Back to the timing point that you mentioned earlier on, Dennis. It's all about timing, and it's not about, you can't force timing. It just happens. And you know what? It's just happening all the time, and people don't know it because they're dead from the neck up, because they haven't turned up to the here and now. It's happening all the time. It's like a small business owner that I know in Devon, in the United Kingdom, who, when I met him first, he owns a carpet shampooing business, and he's 58 years old, and he's had enough of getting down on his hands and knees. He's just, the body isn't able for it anymore. And he said to me when I met him first, he said, I'm looking for other business opportunities, and there's none of them out there. And I spoke to him a week later, and he said, on Monday, I came across a business opportunity. Sorry, the chainsaw massacre is starting up across the road. I don't know if you can hear that. I go out and cut one of his limbs off. On Tuesday, basically what he said was, in the 5 working days of the week in between our 2 conversations, he had come across 5 business opportunities. Why? Because they were there anyway. It's like, and you see, it's not that we need to turn up to the important perfect moment, the important moments, or what we think are important moments. We need to turn up to all of them because we never know when we're going to have an important moment. It's a very good friend of mine who sadly died last October, who owned an insurance business. And one day, a number of years ago, he was going into town in the city of London for a very important meeting a potential new client. So he puts on all his best clothes, goes out to the car, hops into the car, turns the key in the ignition, and nothing happens. And nothing happens, and nothing happens. He gets out of the car. It's pouring rain. And he runs, he changes his clothes because he needs to be dressed slightly differently, runs to the nearest bus stop and waits and waits and waits and waits with another person beside him. And eventually they get talking. And rather than saying, where's the effing bus? And why, you know, why am I getting so effing wet? They start chatting to each other. And she turned out to be the person who introduced him to somebody who gave him far more business than who he thought his important client was going to give him. We never know when we're going to bump into the next most important stranger in our lives. We'd better turn up.
Mm.
And you know, the moment you don't turn up is a moment you'll never get again. It's like the water flowing. It's an alpine, wouldn't call it a stream. There's a torrent running down the bottom of the road here that runs under a bridge that was built by the invading Roman army a couple of thousand years ago. And I stand on that bridge and I look, the water's flying through it at this time of the year because the glaciers are melting. The last winter's snow is melting. And the molecules of water that flow under that bridge will never flow under that bridge again. You need to turn up. And when you turn up, you realize, actually, as you said, Dennis, this is a perfect moment. It doesn't mean we don't, it doesn't mean we mustn't set our minds to grander perfect moments. Or as I said earlier on, in relation to operational perfect moments, things we know we want to achieve as part of the greater scheme of things. Why would you write self-affirmations for yourself for 10 years when you could set your mind like that? We do need to set our minds as well.
Yeah, and there's lots of expressions like life is a journey, not a destination, that just speaks to what perfect moments are all about. Every single moment. There's a good one. There's a good one. There's a good one. Absolutely.
I'll drink to that.
Hmm.
I think it's a lot of recognition. I know that we, in my experience, we tell ourselves a lot of lies or we just don't notice. There is always, I tell people that there are, we'll keep it in a money context, that there's money flowing through you with radio signals and electronic waves and everything. Money is flowing through you at all times. There's billions of dollars that is going through you right now and it's happening. It's just learning how to make it a little sticky. But so you can reach out and grab a little of it if you have a need. So, and we don't recognize those perfect moments because we say that, oh, I'm waiting for the perfect moment. I can't wait until that perfect moment happens. When someone from the outside maybe have a slightly different pair of binoculars on or glasses on, it's like, well, there was a perfect moment right there. It was right there and you could have reached out and touched that and embraced that, but you were waiting. So you didn't realize that you had that perfect moment. So I've done that.
I sometimes worry, and it's one of the reasons why I'm doing Willie's course, that it's not only not being aware of it, it's putting up barriers. Oh, it's not going to happen. Mm. It's not going to happen. And, you know, thinking of Willie's early science, I can remember so clearly when I was 5 years old or something, when gum in the gumball machines was 1 penny. And my mother gave me a dime, a 10 cent piece, and I jammed it in the machine. And not only did I not get 10 gums, I lost my dime. And that still haunts me. It's like, oh my God. And I can only imagine in Willie's paradigm what that's done to me over the years. You laugh.
Well, we might as well laugh. What's the alternative?
Gosh. Pure
that is so powerful though, Michael. I mean, that is something that has it's a law that you have created within your mind. Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that. But absolutely, that's amazing.
So Willie, the number one task when we connect live on a one-to-one chat.
But you know what, Mike? Losing your dime doesn't matter.
I know that.
What matters is what you do now.
Exactly. Yeah. The best time to start financial success is 20 years ago. The next best time is today. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm not stuck in it. Don't get me wrong. I'm as open.
No, but that perfectly links up some of the dots.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, I grew up middle class in Eastern Canada, and my parents, we can't afford the car with electric windows. We got to use the powdered milk, and just driven into us. And I mean, when I was reading, you know, watching the first 10 videos, it's like, oh my gosh, what did I say to my kids?
Oh, yeah. Well, interestingly enough, I talked about tears earlier on. I don't think I have ever sat down one-to-one with anybody who's a parent and not at some point in the early stage of our conversations had tears. Not for the fact that they'd lost their dime and didn't get their 10 gumballs, but what have I done to my children?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what you did to your children. What matters is what you do now.
Well, I'll be writing a couple perfect moments for them. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It works like a dream for my children. And this, the interesting thing is they still don't know I've written any of them.
Yeah, it's funny.
I know you talked earlier on, Shelley, about having permission from the other person. But we all know this stuff because the youngest was 18 months old when I started my business. They've all grown up with this and they all know how the whole thing works. And we all used to meditate together. And, you know, one of my daughters in Paris, when she found herself in a really difficult situation on the Paris metro where everyone else was panicking, rang me afterwards and said, I felt like panicking, but I took a couple of deep breaths. But you know, can you give me a few more meditations so that I can ensure that I'm doing it right every day? So they don't, what they don't know won't hurt them. In fact, the exact opposite.
I think if I qualify that perhaps a bit better on reflection is that obviously with children and that, I think it's using the magic that's actually for a higher purpose and the best purpose for all. So you'd be manifesting something that is actually helping, supporting, nurturing, and it goes with grace. Whereas if you were trying to manifest someone having an accident, you know, that's where you're on. Or again, with the quantum science, if you are sending out a negative energy, it then creates that a negative cord and an entanglement.
Well, Shelley, we must remember that apparently, I never met the man, apparently Adolf Hitler had great presence. He was single-minded and he was on a mission. And look at what his way of using his mind manifests. I know it's a very, very extreme example.
But in his mind, he wasn't manifesting evil. He was just manifesting.
That's the point. We need to be awfully careful. That we're manifesting not what we think we want. This is another huge stumbling block for people with perfect moments. Not what we think we want, but what's best for us. And what's best for those around us as well. Because that's always so much better than what we thought we wanted.
And that's why you talk about setting up the condition without specificity, because the universe or whoever, it knows what it's going to deliver. And if you say, it's going to be beautiful, $5 million, And the universe says, well, I'll just put the other 55 million back in the bank.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because in negotiation, I love it when they go, how much do you want to pay? It's like, well, I don't think so. And 9 times out of 10, I can get a number out of them first because, well, that's the price. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Folks, I'm going to have to jump off. I've got another call of I'm doing an office hours that I'm in charge. So thank you so much for a wonderful conversation. You all are and lovely, thank you. Wonderful people.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Greg. You
thank
too.
You.
You too. It is so hot here.
When I'm trying to create magic in flow for me, is, you know, I'll give an example of a very quick story, is that I love walking, going on walk. Synchronicity, I happen to meet a gentleman whose wife doesn't like walking, he does. So we paired up and we decided to go on walks together. And we were doing a new walk in a new area, not sure, in the middle of the countryside, not sure where to park the car, etc. So in the morning, I can get a bit anxious sometimes. So I focused on, today I am going to have the most wonderful, enjoyable and successful walk, no matter what. We turned up to where the car park was, and there was a gate across and it was closed. And so we turned back out where there's a couple of houses by the entrance. Went to turn back down the country lane, and there are 3 tractors with enormous trailers blocking that lane. So my partner said, oh, well, we'll go down the other way of the lane. I said, no, we'll wait here. The gentleman came out of the house that was next to us and started talking to us, and we were talking about needing a place to park. So the gentleman said, oh, well, actually, if you hadn't gone 5 minutes, the guy that runs the cafe in the car park, you'll see his car come by you in a moment. He'll be opening the gate and he'll be able to, you know, show you where to park the car. Right. So we did that. And sure enough, the guy came. So we were able to follow him down the track. He opened the gate and we got into the car park. Other bits through the walk, we went on a country lane that was a green lane. And in Devon, we had these like enormous, very solid banks. And there's a track.
Oh, yes.
Track down the middle, and we were walking, following our map in the countryside. And as we got to where it came out on a solid lane, as we got instead of a grass lane, started to look at the map to decide where we think we might need be able to go next. And 4 sort of like off-roading vehicles suddenly turned into this grass lane, and. My partner and my friend who said, I can't believe that. That was perfect timing. If we'd have been back down that grass lane, the only way we would have passed those vehicles coming at us was to have climbed on the bonnet and gone over the roof because there was no space.
Or under them.
Or, well, yeah, I suppose. Don't fancy that. But again, there were moments like that all through the walk whereby just, it's almost like you just almost need to tune in and go, do I stop? Do I go? You know, or this way or that way? And even as well, when you ask the question, oh, I don't know whether we go this way or that way. Then we saw a couple with carrying a little youngster going round this house where we hadn't noticed the sign to go up through this field. And I said, well, let's follow them and see where they're going, you know? And it was just one thing after another. And as I say, at the end of it, my friend was saying, I can't believe how lucky we've been all day. Every time we've got stuck, there's been a sign or something that's shown us where to go. So I think part of it is setting yourself up for having that successful day when I first started out, no matter what. But then being open to receiving the signs, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. The signs all over the place. Signs everywhere.
I'm going to have to run here.
I'm going to have to run too. All right.
But wonderful. Thanks, see you Shelley, soon, Mike. For sharing that.
Dennis, good to see you, Shelley. Thanks a million. Lovely
thank
to talk.
You, Shelley. Bye, Dennis.
Have a good one.
This has been a perfect moment.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. Bye.